U.S. businesses thrive on Alibaba's online marketplace, where sales by American companies to Chinese consumers added $53 billion to the U.S. economy in 2022. Discover more at AlibabaPowersBusinesses.com.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
The Biden administration comes out in favor of waiving patent protections on COVID-19 vaccines as governors begin saying no thanks to federal money that's boosting unemployment benefits. Welcome, I'm Kyle Peterson with the Wall Street Journal. We're joined today by my colleagues, WSJ columnists Kim Strassel and Bill McGurn. So far, about 1.2 billion doses of COVID vaccines have been given out worldwide. And the highest per capita rates are in developed nations, including the U.S., throughout Europe, Chile and the UAE doing quite well. But in a bid to get more doses out, India and South Africa have proposed suspending intellectual property protections on COVID vaccines. And the news this week was that the Biden administration announced that it would support that effort. I will read a piece of the statement by the U.S. Trade Representative Catherine Tai, who said, "The administration believes strongly in intellectual property protections, but in service of ending this pandemic, supports the waiver of those protections for COVID-19 vaccines," unquote. And Kim, your column on Friday touches on this. What's the argument that you're making?
Well, here's the problem. Suspending intellectual property patents, you know, it sounds good to the anti-corporate folks of the world, rah, rah, and look, supposedly this is going to get more vaccines out more quickly. The problem, the reality is, it won't work that way. It isn't necessary to expand supply, and it could actually have some really adverse consequences like safety. You know, what we know is that global vaccine supply is already increasing rapidly, thanks in part, by the way, to a number of licensing agreements that vaccine makers have willingly given out to manufacturers around the world. You know, Pfizer and BioNTech this week said that they aim to deliver 3 billion doses this year, which is more than twice their estimate last summer of 1.2 billion. But the bigger issue is this isn't going to work. You know, busting patents, it's not going to speed up production. It takes months to set up new facilities. It usually takes a great deal of expertise too, like the manpower and the people who know how to do it, which cannot easily just be exported to, you know, a Chinese factory somewhere. And then there's the safety issue, is that when you put these things, stand these things out quickly and you don't have that process in place, it's possible that you get flawed or unsafe vaccines. And that's a real risk in this. So, you know, again, this sounds like one of those things that's a nice talking point, but is it really going to speed vaccine production? No. And could it have some problems? Yes. So it doesn't seem to have been well thought through.
I agree. I'm skeptical that the patents, the intellectual property protections, are the real bottleneck here. AstraZeneca and Johnson & Johnson both have already licensed their vaccines, including to manufacturers outside the U.S. Moderna said last year that it won't enforce its COVID patents throughout the duration of the pandemic, so no help there. And especially with the Moderna and Pfizer vaccines, which use new technology, this is real complicated science. And I'll read a couple of quotes from Moderna's CEO this week. He said, "There is no idle mRNA manufacturing capacity in the world. This is a new technology. You cannot go hire people who know how to make mRNA. Those people don't exist." And then he added this, Bill. He said, "We believe this will not help supply more mRNA vaccines to the world any faster in 2021 and 2022.
You're absolutely right, Kyle. Look, this is an answer to what isn't a problem. The problem is not patents. I mean, if you look back, there's a reason that these drugs, vaccines, were originated in the United States, where we have, you know, arguably the most competitive drug industry in the world. And it's because of protect rights and so forth. I'm really not sure also, you know, how legal this is, that the president can sign away your property rights to someone else just with an executive order. I wonder about the legality of that. But it looks like moral preening, that Joe Biden's going to, you know, seek to get the world's approval by sacrificing drug companies, which are often unpopular, and implying that they're too greedy and so forth. So he's going to give away their store. But they're all, you know, we've had a couple editorials on this. There's all sorts of problems with this. One is you mentioned not only the shortage of people that can produce this stuff overseas, but the quality control that we'd have and so forth. So I think there's going to be a lot more opposition before this is done. And again, it gets back to the fundamental point. This isn't the problem. I believe I would argue the opposite, that the reason we got a vaccine in record time is because of our property laws and so forth for intellectual property in the United States. And that's why we have a very strong industry.
And Kim, on the quality control point, even if the WTO suspends these intellectual property protections, it's not clear to me that that any trade secrets or information about how you actually physically make the stuff can be forced out of these companies. And even if they are, it's not clear that an unlicensed manufacturer would be able to pull it off. And that's what is it's a point that's raised in the journal's editorial today, which is if you have an unlicensed manufacturer who decides we're going to try to start making these COVID vaccines according to the J&J formula, let's say, and it doesn't work out, I mean, that could have huge repercussions on confidence in the vaccine even made by J&J and the licensed people.
Yeah, absolutely. That's absolutely correct. Because I think what a lot of people forget is that there's a number of different processes here that are involved in successfully producing a vaccine. And the patents protecting the technology are simply one part of it, you know, the formula, as it were. But the other enormous part of it, as you said, is the manufacturing process, which, and I think vaccine makers don't get enough credit. That was the other enormous feat of this year, of this past year. It was not just that they managed to crack the code to figure out how to create a vaccine that would work against this particular virus, but that they had to basically engineer from ground up an entire manufacturing process, because the way this is done is not the way that a lot of vaccines are produced. So that was another part of it. That, as you say, is our trade secrets, as it were, and not necessarily something that you could force a company to disgorge outside of maybe a very extremely contentious litigation, which I think they'd be likely to prevail in. You know, and then the final process here, which is also really important. One of the other great feats this past year is that these vaccine makers also put together a very complex logistical model that allowed them to get a hold of scarce ingredients, allowed them to sort of make sure that all the things they need to go into this continue to show up at the right time in the right places. And if you suddenly had a whole bunch of new manufacturers who were attempting to do that, they could really throw off that whole logistical supply chain for everybody, as you saw competition for scarce ingredients really ramp up. And that could actually retard the expansion of all of this.
Hang tight. We'll be right back. You're listening to Potomac Watch from the Wall Street Journal.
U.S. businesses thrive on Alibaba's online marketplace, where sales by American companies to Chinese consumers added $53 billion to the U.S. economy in 2022. Discover more at AlibabaPowersBusinesses.com.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. On the point that Kim brings up about these scarce resources, I mean, that's where I think, to my mind, the Biden administration would have much better luck is if they went to Pfizer and Moderna and these companies and said, where are the bottlenecks? What are you having trouble getting a hold of? What can we help you with? Is it manpower? Is it anything like that? Or even to that point, if they said, we're just going to buy a massive amount of vaccines and then distribute them throughout the world. And I mean, Pfizer said this week that its COVID vaccine produced $3.5 billion in revenue during the first quarter. And I don't want to say that $3.5 billion is not a lot, but in terms of the U.S. government's budget, and especially the kind of infrastructure and family plans, $4 trillion that Biden is proposing, it seems, Bill, to me that just buying this stuff from Pfizer and Moderna is a way better approach.
Yeah, what you described at the outset about how to approach, you know, what can we do to help? What's an obstacle that's in your way to either expanding production or, you know, opening supply lines overseas? And that was the approach largely of the Trump administration. They didn't say, we're going to tell you how to do your business, what you need. They basically asked, what can we do to help? And especially, what can we do to get out of the way so that you can do this more quickly than you might otherwise have done this? But the disadvantage of that approach is that you don't get to strut and preen the way Joe Biden did, as though this is a great moral decision. You know, to put this in context, you know, the I thought the editorial that we had put it nicely, saying this may be the single worst presidential economic decision since Nixon's wage and price controls. I mean, it's on that scale. And again, we've spent the last 5 years complaining about China ripping off our intellectual property, which is the heart of any really competitive company, right? Ripping them off. And now we're just turning it over there. It's just mind-boggling. And it just seems, again, this is, you know, moral grandstanding. Someone also very unfamiliar with the private sector, who thinks he can substitute that with the stroke of a pen issuing an order. And I think if this is allowed to go through, we're going to pay a high price. But I think there's going to be a lot of pushback and a lot of litigation, because there's a lot at stake here for a very important industry.
And some of the pushback has already arrived. I mean, reportedly, the next step in this process is negotiations at the World Trade Organization. But it's not clear that there's going to be agreement there. Pfizer's vaccine partner is a German company, and German Chancellor Angela Merkel has already said that she opposes this. She said the protection of intellectual property is a source of innovation, and it must remain so in the future, unquote. And so, Kim, this looks just a little bit strange to me. Biden, the administration, comes out for this proposal, apparently didn't bother to consult with its allies on that. So, I mean, is this just the Biden administration kind of giving in on a messaging statement for progressives?
Absolutely. And you just put your finger on a bungled aspect of this. Is it looks very much as if the Biden administration did this to curry headlines. They got a whole bunch of praise from these international organizations, the WTO, the WHO, and fawning headlines from many in the press about moral leadership. And obviously they made the progressives happy, because this has been a growing demand led by folks like Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders in the last couple of months in particular. But you also put your finger on the other massive problem to making this happen, which is, in fact, the WTO. Everyone says, oh, great. Well, the Biden administration now backs this taking place. So first of all, this would proceed under what's essentially a sort of trade agreement negotiated within the WTO. The WTO has 164 members, and the way that body works is that all the members have to agree. So already the fact that Germany does not, and it is a member of this, is a major problem. But also remember, we are talking about one of these classic international institutions where speed is not necessarily a bragging right. And you already have people talking about how the length of time to potentially even negotiate something like this, that is, even if people were in agreement, probably means it's not going to get done until the WTO's next ministerial conference, which isn't scheduled to begin until the end of November. And I think this is why you see a lot of doctors and medical officials actually expressing some alarm about this Biden decision, because their argument is, look, we only have enough time and resources to invest in certain things. And if you're going to waste all of it in the next 6 months on these kind of negotiations and put everything into that, we are going to potentially miss the opportunity to do something that really would help, like expanding manufacturing here in the United States for export, or in other countries that are already producing and have manufacturing facilities in place. All of this just seems to be a mistake of a major magnitude on every level.
But it seems to me that it sends a very negative signal to the researchers who are working on these vaccines, the founders of these companies, the financiers who are building them buildings and manufacturing facilities and buying them equipment. And there was some chatter. I mentioned one of the profit numbers this week. There was some chatter about these. And the other one is from Moderna, which brought in $1.7 billion in revenue from its COVID vaccine. And what was interesting about that story to me, Bill, is that this is the first quarterly profit in Moderna's company history, and it was founded in 2010. And I mean, even just in context of a $20 trillion American economy, $1.7 billion does not seem to me like a whole lot. And maybe very well-deserved profits, Bill, if we can get this, get the economy open back up again.
Yeah, why would we resent a company that produced a vaccine in record time? Why would we not expect them to make some money? Again, this is why we were able to do it here and people weren't able to do it as effectively elsewhere. Does anyone want these non-US vaccines? I don't think so. They want the American name on it. And I think these companies use their resources efficiently, you know, and the profit system is one of the things that rewards them. But I think, again, in the progressive pantheon, drug companies are evil and must be punished, and they must, you know, they must pull off all these kind of miracles, but just do it altruistically, never, ever dare seek a profit or something. And I it's leading to very unwise decisions. And it's just moving the goalposts, you know, in the middle of the game for the people that are involved in this. And it comes out of nowhere. And the idea, again, that we're siding with people that want to, sap one of our most innovative industries and important industries is mind-boggling.
But also interesting in that it's moving the goalposts in the middle of the game when you're simultaneously demanding another touchdown from the team. I mean, there's research still going on. Moderna has started trials on what it calls its next generation vaccine candidate, and reportedly that it could be refrigerator stable, so it would be even easier to distribute throughout the developing world. They're also working on shots for these COVID variants, Kim. And why send a signal when everybody wants that research to continue and go even faster than it already is?
Exactly. And by the way, look beyond just vaccines too. Look, that's all very good news. And it's exceptionally important that we make sure that companies feel confident that this investment and their work is going to yield something for them. And on vaccines, but also other things. Look, one of the more notable tweets we got this week was from Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. And her response in the news that the Biden administration said they were willing to just break these patents and hand this intellectual property over to people was, great, let's do insulin next. And that's the real fear of the precedent that you are setting here, is that, you know, as we know from the left, once they lower the bar, they just keep lowering it. And, you know, vaccines today, but what other drugs tomorrow? What do you justify? You know, what could the average progressive justify as needing to break a patent on? Because in their view, it's a very important cause or something we have to simply lower drug prices for. You know, for AOC, it's insulin, but, you know, cancer drugs, Alzheimer's drugs, Parkinson's drugs. I mean, all of these are important. But one of the reasons we have new therapies for them is because companies have put in that investment and they do it because they have some security of mind that there's intellectual property and patents that will allow them to recoup some of those costs and profit from it. And that's probably one of the, as Bill said, this is one of the worst decisions ever, mostly because of the risk of a precedent it could set for all kinds of things that could dramatically be cataclysmic for drug innovation.
Finally, the economic news on Friday was a disappointing jobs report. The U.S. added about 260,000 jobs in April, lower than expected, and that compares with about 770,000 jobs in March. So the unemployment rate ticked up a tenth of a point to 6.1%. And yet, Bill, there are job openings, and employers say they are desperate to hire. So what's going on here?
Well, I think there's a lot going on. One, at a macro level, I think, you know, the spending, the anticipation, the various moves by the Biden administration on taxes going up. I mean, they're spooking some people from who may be pulling back on investment or holding up plans. But also, I think a big factor is that we've encouraged unemployment with with the federal addition to it, to the package and everything. And so there are a lot of people for whom it makes sense. It's a rational decision not to go back to work quite just yet. So you tend to find this, you know, in the lower paid areas on the scale. And, I hear it anecdotally. I know, for example, I'm doing some construction in my house. We're waiting for stuff to be unloaded from a ship. It's been there for 8 weeks. They can't find people to come in and unload it. I'm looking at other stuff that's a shortage. I know restaurants, you know, in my town that can't find people to work for them. So things have their effect. We warned about the unemployment provisions that we might be encouraging people not to work, to stay at home. And now I think we're seeing a little bit of that.
Yeah, on that point, I'll read a bit of a statement by Ben Sasse, who is focusing on that too. He's the Republican senator from Nebraska. He said on Friday, there are 7,400,000 jobs open in the U.S., but fewer than 300,000 people found new work last month. Why? This tragedy is what happens when Washington know-it-alls decide to pretend they're generous by paying for more unemployment than for work. Unquote. And Kim, part of what is interesting is recently we've had a couple of governors who are now saying no more. They're not gonna accept this unemployment boost that is under the federal terms runs till September.
Yeah, not only doing that, but some of them are coming up with plans to actually take some of the money that they've got and offer employment bonuses to people who, if they're employed by a certain date and they remain employed for a certain amount of time, they would kind of get this payout that, you know, I argue would be a far better way of using money to actually, like, if we're going to be spending money on people, let's actually use it in a way that encourages them to go to work rather than it discourages them from ever answering a job ad. Just one more thing on this that I think is worth noting, too. It's not just that the federal government is paying a lot of money not to work, but then they're paying a second time to deal with the consequences. And we saw that in action. I just thought it was mind-blowing this week that even as we were getting all of these stories about the problem employers are having getting some people to come back to work, particularly in the restaurant industry, we had the Biden administration out touting its new restaurant revitalization fund, which is therefore paying the restaurants to deal with the problems that were caused by federal enhanced unemployment. So, you know, how many times are the federal taxpayers going to pay to deal with bad federal policy? And, you know, those are the things that they don't get enough attention, but it's why a lot of people look at government and wonder why it thinks it's actually capable of handling anything.
But I do wonder, as we go into the summer, whether more states are going to follow suit. The two that have done this so far that I'm aware of are Montana and South Carolina. And they say they're going to end the federal boost to unemployment benefits in June, essentially. And just for context, so Montana's unemployment rate in March was 3.8%, which is pretty darn low. And so the governor there says he's going to use some of the COVID money instead and give people $1,200 if they get off unemployment and keep a job for 4 weeks. And what makes this particularly interesting, Bill, is that there's been this running policy debate about the effect of this boost to unemployment benefits, how big it is, how big of a disincentive to work. And it seems like we're going to have a little bit of a natural experiment and see how Montana and South Carolina and any states that follow suit there, how they fare compared to other states. Bill, we'll give you the last word here.
Yeah, I hope we do. That's partly what our system's based on. And I think some of the states are realizing, you know, they want people back to work and they're looking for ways to provide incentives and especially to remove disincentives, as some of these federal payments are, for people to get back to work. So I hope we do, because then we'll have a better idea what works best. I think I know the answer to that, but it's good to see different people trying different things. You look at Florida and New York on COVID, and we look at the reopenings, and I have more confidence that in the states to trust their own people to go back to work and not, you know, a lengthening government-inspired stay-at-home process. So I'm hoping we have one, because I think the results will be very clear for people to see.
Thank you, Kim and Bill. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back next week with another edition of Potomac Watch.
U.S. businesses thrive on Alibaba's online marketplace, where sales by American companies to Chinese consumers added $53 billion to the U.S. economy in 2022. Discover more at alibabapowersbusinesses.com.